and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hey friends, I just wanted to pop in and talk a little bit about MBOM behind the scenes. When I entered the yoga world as a teacher, I was surprised by how many yoga teachers were struggling with the business side of yoga. And that's why I created MBOM. MBOM helps yoga teachers and studio owners become entrepreneurs. It helps you to go from surviving to thriving with your yoga business. I am on a mission to change the yoga industry, to teach yoga teachers and studio owners about the business of yoga, and to help you feel more confident, successful, and abundant. After releasing hundreds of podcast episodes, I want to create content that dives deeper into helping yoga entrepreneurs thrive and elevate their businesses. This is where MBOM Behind the Scenes comes in. Each week, you will get bonus content from the weekly guest or myself, diving deeper into how you can take the teachings and apply them to your business. This podcast is designed for yoga teachers and studio owners who are ready to take it to the next level. If you enjoy MBOM and have been looking for an affordable way to learn more, this is it. For the cost of 2 lattes per month, you will get never-before-heard content that you can't access anywhere else that will give you tangible ways to dive deeper into your yoga business. If this sounds like something you're interested in, let's dive in. Head on over to patreon.com/MBOM yoga and sign up to get behind the scenes now. Once again, that's patreon.com/MBOM yoga to get all the exclusive behind the scenes content. I'll see you there. Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of the MBOM podcast. I am excited that you're joining me for today's episode of the show. It's going to be a good one. This episode is brought to you by Offering Tree, an all-in-one, easy-to-use online business platform that I've been working with for years, as you know if you've been listening to the show. And if you're looking to save time, energy, and money, make sure you check out Offering Tree. And don't forget to grab your special discount at offeringtree.com/MBOM. And I'll be telling you a bit more about why I love Offering Tree and why I think they're a really fantastic service and software for yoga teachers a little bit later on in the episode. But for now, let's dive into today's episode of the show. Today on the podcast, I am really excited to be rejoined by Crystal Gray. Crystal came on the podcast back in 2018, and we talked all about the divine feminine, the business that she was working on at that point. And it was really fun to have her back on the show because just like everyone else, Crystal's business has shifted quite a bit over the last few years. And so in this episode, Crystal shares how her business has shifted, what she's kind of changed and done over the last 3 years, including talking about how she's changed up her niche a little bit. So she shares a little bit about that. We also talk about her top tips for how yoga teachers can teach amazing classes, as well as how to run a great online yoga teacher training program. This is something she was doing even pre-pandemic, so she has a lot of expertise in this. And as more and more programs and teachings go online, it's so important to make sure that you're running a program that really is solid. So Crystal has lots of tips and business lessons for that. So this episode is really jam-packed with so much goodness. I hope that you enjoy it as much as I did. And without further ado, here is Crystal. Welcome to the podcast today, Crystal. I'm really excited to have you here with me.
I'm really excited to be back. Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, I'm stoked to have you back on the show. We were just looking up. The last time you were on the podcast was January 2018. So it's been more than 3 years at this point since we chatted officially on the show, which is pretty crazy because you've gone through a ton of, I'm sure, personal evolutions as well as business evolutions. So I wanted to just start by giving you the opportunity to update listeners on what you've been up to over the last couple of years.
Sure. Well, first of all, we can just talk. I'll let everybody know kind of where I was at that point, which we both just talked about beforehand. So where I was in 2018 was I was just starting to really get my yoga teacher trainings started online. So I actually started those online, you know, a while back before a lot of people were kind of forced to. I live out in the middle of nowhere on a farm with my husband. And so even though I did have a yoga studio for a while, I just found that I didn't have as big of a reach as I wanted. And so then I was just thinking, all right, how can I connect with more people? And I found that online was the way to do that. So I sold my studio and then just, yeah, started transitioning everything online. In 2016 is really whenever I started the transition. And that was with the launch of my Facebook group, and it's called the Yoga Goddess Collective. So back whenever I started that, it was, I was focusing more a little bit more on the goddess energy. And I think that that's because it was something that was really important to me. Well, I know that it was something that was really important to me in my life at that time. And just kind of reconnecting with that energy, even though that now that's not like really a huge part of my focus. It's still, you know, part of my life, but it's not part of what I teach. So now I'm leading more, continuing to lead more online yoga teacher trainings. And as you know, and everybody else knows, that's kind of a hot thing right now. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, but I'll let you ask me questions so I don't just ramble on forever.
I love it. No, that's amazing to hear. It's really cool. Like one thing that's cool about looking back on the episode we did in 2018 is you were already shifting your business online, which, you know, obviously a lot of people have shifted online over the last year, 15 months at this point. But you were doing that way ahead of the curve. And so I guess, where were you at with your business kind of like pre-pandemic or like right as the pandemic was hitting, like March, 2020?
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, I feel so grateful to be where I was because I didn't need to pivot. I was doing exactly what needed to be done for my business in that time. You know, of course there were a few things, but I already had everything in place. I had all of my course content online. The only thing that's different now, which you can find positives and negatives and everything. Yes, the positive is that a lot more people are learning right now, and the Yoga Alliance has approved, you know, had an exemption for, you know, since COVID for online trainings, which is amazing. But then, you know, the downside is that, yeah, there is a lot more competition. And my program has always been the same price as my in-person program because you get the same benefits and you come out just as amazing of a teacher through my online program as you do with my in-person program. So, you know, that can be a little bit tricky in the market whenever you're positioning your program and it's, you know, $29.50 and then you've got some other programs that are maybe a few hundred dollars. But it's, again, you can find positives and negatives in everything. So it's really just about positioning yourself and talking about what makes your program unique and figuring out why people would want to train with you specifically and, yeah, why you're different.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you bring that up too, because I think one thing I really saw as a big shift right around the pandemic was all of a sudden all these people are online, but you know, they are doing Facebook Lives and Instagram Lives and just sending their Zoom links out. And there was a lot of, you know, free stuff happening, which mm-hmm. I think comes from a really great intention, right? Like mm-hmm. yoga can serve a beautiful purpose when people are stressed and their, you know, yeah. nervous systems are fried. And I think it's great to be able to serve in that way. However, I think a lot of us realize like, okay, this isn't just going to be like stay at home for 2 weeks and then everything goes back to normal. You know, mm-hmm. we're in this for the long haul. We need to figure out something more sustainable because for most of us, it's not sustainable to just not charge for our offerings. And right. I think seeing a lot of online programs pop up that are extremely low price, like mm-hmm. extremely low price. It's just mm-hmm. kind of insane. It's like, you know, how are you even paying for your costs? Because even with online, there's a cost, you know?
Well, I mean, I definitely have some feedback on that. The thing is that the reason why I'll talk about my program instead of talking about others, the reason why my price is higher is because of how much interaction you get and how much support. So I've heard from other people that, you know, they might go through some other programs where they don't feel like they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. They don't really have anybody that they can reach out to for help. They feel kind of alone and lost, and they don't get feedback on things. So that's the thing. Like, yeah, my programs have a lot of interaction and a lot of live time that we spend together, but a lot of feedback on your poses and on your teaching, which, you know, I think kind of lacks in some programs, but it depends on what you want. If you're really just going through a program to deepen your own practice, I think that some of those programs can serve a purpose. And it can also be like, hey, do I even want to be a teacher? Let me kind of dabble in this and see if I want to be a teacher and if I even want to invest. And then maybe you might invest in a little bit more down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I almost feel like we sort of need this differentiation between these two types of programs, like programs for people who want to deepen their practice and maybe they are, you know, a different format and a lower price point. And then, you know, programs like the one that you offer, that's like, this is going to teach you how to be a great teacher. Cause I do sort of feel like those like outcomes are quite different, right? Like there's a difference mm-hmm. between deepening your practice and maybe learning some teaching skills along the way versus like people who know they want to be teachers after, like they need to be trained in a certain way. And like you said, have interaction and be practice teaching and getting feedback. I mean, that is so important. And I think it's completely possible to have a great experience with this in the online space. It's just a matter of how you actually go about doing it, like you said.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah, for sure.
Hey everyone, we're just taking a quick break from the podcast to talk about Offering Tree. I wanted to remind you about the special discount you can get with Offering Tree. I love telling yoga teachers about Offering Tree because not only is it your one-stop shop for all things that you need in your yoga business, but it is also easy to use, it's affordable, and it's truly an amazing company to work with. Offering Tree lets you sell courses, run classes, manage memberships, and so much more with just one account. That's right, just one login for all those parts of your business. One of the best parts about Offering Tree is their online store. You can sell digital content like yoga videos, challenges, and courses right from your website. If you're teaching yoga classes and looking to level up, selling digital content is the next step to growing your business. Over the last year, we've seen so much pivot and change happen in the yoga industry, and having your own unique yoga business where you offer your students different course material can be so beneficial in creating a sustainable business with diversified income. And while there's many different platforms that you can create courses on these days, Offering Tree's course tools are easy to use and they're really affordable. And if you have a website you already like, you can still use Offering Tree. But there's one other thing I want to tell you about Offering Tree that makes all the difference in the world to me and probably to you too. They're a company that truly cares about yoga teachers and the wellness industry overall. I chose to partner with Offering Tree because I love the product and I love the people. Whenever yoga teachers have a suggestion for something that they need out of the platform, they can reach out directly to the people at Offering Tree and they're actually heard. So much of the development that Offering Tree has gone through over the last year has been because of yoga teachers like yourself. So if you're looking to save time, energy, and money in your yoga business, Offering Tree is hands down the software for you. Go to offeringtree.com/MBOM to learn more and get your discount. Okay, let's get back to the episode. And so, you know, there's a lot happening in the world and whatnot. And I know that you've shifted your focus a little bit to work with teachers. I mean, you've been working with teachers for a while, but also people practicing. Can you talk a little bit about this decision to really niche in on working with yoga teachers?
Yeah. So it was scary. And I really don't know why, because I've been doing it for, like you said, a long time. I've been leading yoga teacher trainings for, I don't know, at least five years, I'd say. And so it's something that I've already been doing. And so I think some of my followers or past students were like, oh, I already thought that that's what you were. But it was like, for me, I was kind of drawing a line in the sand because I am really passionate about teaching beginners and I'm really, really good at it. And I love doing it because so often I would go to yoga classes in person back in the day when we did things like that. And I could just see that people would come to class and they would feel like, oh, I can't do yoga, or yoga's not for me, or look at all. Yeah, I could just tell what was going through their head. And for me, whenever I lead my yoga teacher trainings, I teach my students in such a way to teach classes in a way where no one will ever leave their class thinking, I can't do yoga, I'm not good enough for yoga, yoga's not for me. And so I totally veered off from what your initial question was. Can you repeat it?
Yeah, of course. Just this decision to focus in on working with teachers.
Yes. Yes. And so how I was kind of doing beginners and teachers. So then what I realized was, Crystal, you don't have to do everything. Okay. And it's funny because this is what you as a business coach and me, I do a lot of business too. And so I'm always telling especially my 500 hour training, you need to niche down. You need to pick somebody that you are focusing on. And so even though I was saying it, it was so hard for me to let go of the beginner stuff that I did, because I feel like there's just such a need. I don't feel like there's enough yoga teachers out there that truly know how to teach beginners. It doesn't just mean slower. It doesn't just mean easier poses. It really has to do with the kind of language that you're using and making things accessible and the inclusivity and, you know, just helping people to feel empowered by your class, not disempowered by your class. And so what I realized was, oh, I'm leading yoga teacher trainings now. I'm training all of these amazing teachers, and they can go out and they can teach the beginners. I don't have to do that anymore. So it was like a huge weight that was kind of lifted and a huge realization. And it just made me really happy and like proud to be doing that. And so it was really more of a line drawn in the sand for me, so that my languaging and my marketing can really just start going towards either people that want to be yoga teachers or people that are yoga teachers already and want to increase their confidence and increase their just knowledge in teaching and specifically teaching, you know, like the regular Joe. You know, I teach just kind of regular people. And that just means, you know, I teach dudes in their 60s at this recovery center that I teach at. I teach all different body shapes and sizes. And that's what I want people that go through my trainings to be able to do, because it's really a huge part of my mission to break down the stereotype of what yoga is and who can be doing yoga. And I do think that that's starting to change, but I think that we as teachers need to be changing that for sure on a grander scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree with that. And it's so funny, as you were talking, Crystal, you were saying how, you know, you have this passion for beginners. And I was thinking, but you're teaching all these teachers and you can teach them how to teach these people. And then you said exactly that. So I just really love that. I think that that's a really beautiful realization. And I think I get it. I mean, niching down is really scary because you think about like, oh, I'm not going to reach these other people and I am good at working with them. You know, am I closing off, you know, myself to new clients and new opportunities and maybe revenue and that type of thing. But I think it actually does. Closing one door kind of opens a lot of other doors, I guess, per se.
It does. And I think, Amanda, it's because of that clarity piece. Once you have that clarity, and it's like what I teach my trainees, I have them whenever they're teaching their showcase, I say, think of one person that you are teaching. It not just like, oh, it's a beginner class and it's, you know, about this theme. No, I want you to have one person in your mind that you are teaching this class to. And I want you to teach every time you talk, you are talking to that person. Because when you do that, it just makes your mission comes through and your authentic self comes through. And it just makes things that much better. And it's the same thing with me and my niching down. And honestly, it's like the first time where if people get off my mailing list, I'm like, yeah, that's all right. You know, because it's bringing more, the more people that stay on, even if people unsubscribe, the people that stay on, they're the people that really will benefit from what I have to say. And yes, I'm great at teaching beginners, but this is what I'm passionate about. Like anybody listening to this, if you close your eyes and you might not want to see yourself on stage, but like for me, that's a dream of mine, being on stage, empowering people, making people laugh and come together in community and feel empowered and, you know, crying, but like in a good way. That's kind of what I see myself doing. And whenever I see myself doing this, who am I talking to? Who am I lifting up? Who am I inspiring? And when I see myself doing that, it's yoga teachers. It's not beginners. It's not just women in general. It's not just anybody interested in yoga. It is specifically yoga teachers, because I find that there's so many teachers out there that just don't believe that their voice is like valid or that they have anything worthwhile to say. But everybody does. That's the thing. Like everybody does. And it's so interesting to start watching that unfold in my programs when people start to kind of realize like, oh, shit. Like, oh, sorry. I don't know if I'm such a cuss in this or not, but welcome to me, I cuss. Okay. So, but yeah, just watching that unfold and watching people start to realize, oh, maybe I do have something to share. Oh, it's just, there's just nothing better than that, Amanda. I love it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I always think it's really cool, like working with yoga teachers. Like I teach the business of yoga in a teacher training program, and I'll give them like just something simple, like build out your resume or write your bio. And I always think it's so amazing to see how they weave their personalities through and how this like one simple sort of task that could be very generic never is. Like they always come back with, you know, different colors and different photos and different ways of formatting and ways of saying things and sharing what they're doing. And I just think it's really cool to empower people to kind of discover who they are and then bring that out into the world. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about working with teachers and especially teaching them how to teach is that you can teach them these skills and then they get to put their own flair on it and reach the people they're passionate about reaching and use their voice to share a message that is impactful for them.
For sure. And that's the thing. And this is the thing that I love about leading an online yoga teacher training. I don't have a yoga studio where, you know, everybody's going to come in and teach for my yoga studio. So I feel like yoga studios, not to put them down or anything, it's just different. But I feel like sometimes yoga studios are training people in a certain way because they want them to teach at their studios, which I totally get, right? But for me, I'm not doing that. I want everybody to find out exactly what kind of teacher they want to be and infuse their teaching with themselves and to help them realize, listen, I don't want a whole bunch of mini crystals running around because there's one of me. That's enough. We don't really need any more of me. We need more of exactly who each and every one of you are. And that's enough. And I think for too long, it's like so many yoga teachers are trying to maybe act like another yoga teacher that they really like or whatever. And I think in the beginning, they do that just because it's easier than being themselves. You know, maybe they've watched this yoga teacher over and over and over. So it's kind of easier to be that person or to act like that person. But I just want to tell everybody that's listening, like you are enough and you, whatever you have to offer, there are people that need exactly that.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I feel like when you're learning something new, it's really natural to like imitate whoever teaches you. Like you see it a lot with like kids as they're growing up. Right. And then I think the thing is like encouraging those yoga teachers as they're, you know, maybe saying things the exact same way you are. It's like, now see how that feels for you. Like, is there a way you can put your own, you know, flair on what you're saying, or maybe use your own words around doing that? And I think that, yeah, imitation is perfectly normal, but it's a matter of like, can we empower people to embody the practices to a point where they can step into who they fully are as a teacher?
Exactly. And that's what I teach is embodiment versus memorization. So it's like, how can we embody the pose more so that you're not memorizing? Okay, now put your arm here, bring your arm up overhead. Like if you can embody it and you can start to visualize it, then you just don't really have to think about it as much. And then once you get that down, then your own personality and your own flair and your intuition can start to come through a lot much more easily.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. And so I know that you working with yoga teachers a lot, you've got a lot of really like great tips for teachers. And I would love to dive into different ways to be teaching amazing classes. And I'm sure this goes for both in-person and online classes. Let's dive into some of your top tips, Crystal.
Okay. Well, the first thing that just popped into my head is this goes for online and in person, is to make eye contact with everybody in the beginning of class. So if you think about the koshas, I'm not going to get them into so much, but kind of going from the outside, the outermost layer to the innermost layer, kind of looking at everybody, making eye contact with everybody. If you can have the chance to use their name, it's great to use their name as well. Now, again, it's going to depend where you are. But if I'm teaching online, I love to start my classes up at the camera and really making that connection with everybody before I go back to my mat. And then whenever I'm in person, I do try to learn people's names while both online or in person, especially if I know that they're going to be coming back. If it's just kind of a one-time kind of class, I'm probably not going to try to learn everybody's names. But the cool thing about Zoom is that their names are on the screen. So you can come up to the camera every once in a while and say, oh, you know, great job, Amanda. That down dog looks great. Or you can just use their name. So I try to use people's names at least once throughout my class. And I think that that really makes things more personable. Mm-hmm. So that's one. That was just the first thing that came to my head. And we already talked about it, but not feeling like you need to be like somebody else, you know, like any other teacher, that being yourself is enough. And sometimes that comes with time. So that's okay. Not trusting, whenever you trust in yourself and in your knowledge. So just kind of like, you know, you get to your class, you're like, well, you know what you know. So you know what you know once you get there. So just trusting in that knowledge that you already have. And I think as long as you go into the class, you know, not just kind of having your mission, like, how do you want people to feel after this class? How do you want people to feel? And kind of keeping that in mind as you move through the class and just trusting whatever kind of comes through. And a lot of times, really, it's whatever you need to hear. So I tell my trainees, you know, close your eyes whenever they're in, whenever you have your students in a place where they can close their eyes, maybe it's in child's pose or whenever you have people in down dog and they're not looking at you, you can take a moment to kind of check in with yourself and close your eyes and say what you need to hear. So I'm always telling people, relax your forehead, relax your jaw, because that's what I need to hear. But also things related to the theme, maybe if it's about empowerment or something, because chances are if you need to hear that, trust me, people that are in your class, they need to hear it as well. I think I already kind of said this one, but like knowing who you are teaching to. And that also goes with your marketing and with your class description, right? So if you can put in your class description, whether it's online or in person, who this class is for, you're going to attract the students that you want to have in your class, right? So maybe kind of thinking about what their struggles or their issues are so that you can really speak to that. And also knowing generally, like, how flexible are these students? Like, are these the kind of students that are going to walk in and be able to do a standing forward fold and touch the ground, or which is not the majority of people that are going to be coming to most classes? You know, so just kind of knowing who you're teaching to so that you know what kind of modifications to give. And I always teach my trainees to teach in a way where you don't give the hardest variation first and then be like, okay, well, if you can't do that, then do this. Okay, well, if you can't do that, then do this. Because people don't want to be like that person that's like, oh man, like I got to grab my blocks, you know, then they feel like they're not good or whatever. So I always say, start from the easiest modification that those students need, you know, so have everybody's hands on the blocks, have them in the easiest variation that the group needs as a whole. Then if you need to feel more sensation, go into this variation. Then, you know, and talking about the ego and kind of keeping that out and staying more in tune with your body and what your body needs. So that's probably actually one of my biggest tips.
I actually have a question about that one, Crystal.
Yeah.
So I love that tip. I'm wondering for people who teach at studios or maybe multiple studios and kind of teach these, like, you know, all levels hatha or hatha vinyasa mm-hmm. classes, which are so general and can kind of be so generic and have people from all walks of life walking in. You know, if you're kind of maybe new to this and you haven't built up your own student base and that type of thing, and you have no idea who's going to show up for your classes, how do we kind of apply this, like, know who you're teaching to philosophy to that?
Okay. Well, first of all, there needs to be that description that comes into play. So the, even though it's might say all levels, there still needs to be some sort of parameters. So what I do is I say, you've got to be able to get up and down from the ground easily. And you have to be able to put pressure, like be on your hands and knees. And if you can't be on your hands and knees and you can't get up and down easily, then that's going to put you in a completely different category. And so that would be more like gentle, like maybe Hatha class, chair class, you know, something where you would focus more on, you'd have them seated maybe, and then you'd get them up to standing, do some standing poses, and then maybe back down. Whereas if they can put pressure on their hands and knees and they can get up and down easily, then that opens up your opportunity to be able to teach some sort of either slow flow or just something that includes a little bit more movement with the breath. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that that's always important too for teachers. Like I think sometimes teachers can be a little bit, especially if they're new, like a little bit nervous about approaching studio owners, but I think it is important to like have those conversations, like, you know, what level are the students coming to this class normally? Like,
yeah,
what poses are normally taught here? If you're subbing, like having a really good sense for who is showing up so you can do a good job teaching, because it doesn't benefit anyone. And it sucks as a teacher when you've like prepped a theme and a sequence and then people show up, and if they can't be on their hands and knees and you've got, you know, a class where you've planned a bunch of that, that's going to really throw you.
That's the worst.
It's going to just make you stressed.
Yeah. And then like your mind goes blank and then you can't even think straight. And then, oh my God, I hate that feeling. I luckily haven't been there in a really long time. And I think I figured out most ways to get around it, but yeah. And then that way, if somebody does show up to the class, it's kind of like, well, it was in the description, you know? So then you don't have to take it on, because if it's not in the description, then you feel bad. And then you want to teach to that one student. Okay. But then what happens to the 19 other people that are in the class that are expecting more of like a level 1-2 flow? And then you've got this one person that showed up, because that is really hard. If they can't be on their hands and knees, that takes out a lot of things. You might not think it does, but it does, just with like transitions and everything like that. So yeah, super duper important. And then here's the opposite of that though. Sometimes too, especially new teachers freak out if a teacher comes to their class, right? And I remember whenever I was a newer teacher, it's like, oh my God, that person's a teacher. And like they, you know, they do harder poses and whatever. So then you start teaching to that person. Well, then what about the other 19 people that were expecting a level 1 class? And then now all of a sudden you're freaking doing like side crow and stuff just to make this teacher happy, right? So it's like, if anybody comes to your class, there was the description and they read the description and they knew what they were getting themselves into. So you stick within the parameters that description stated.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny that you say that, because I actually remember feeling that, like, especially as a new yoga teacher, like when, you know, a teacher from the studio or like, oh my gosh, if the studio owner would come, I'd just be like immediately sweating.
Yes.
And I feel like I would actually probably still feel that way a little bit. I think it's always intimidating to have other teachers in your classes a little bit.
It is. And you know what? It keeps you on your toes. So it's not a bad thing. And it's not a bad feeling to be nervous. I'm still nervous a lot whenever I teach. And I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to say was I really liked your first tip about eye contact and names. I think this is something that's like one of those little customer service things that really goes a long way. Like just having yourself, like, I think most of us just want to be like seen and heard and held in some way. And there is something nice about just going somewhere and being anonymous sometimes. Like there's no expectations on you. Nobody like knows who you are. But I think for the most part, like we crave community and being included in this environment. I think something as much as like the teacher saying your name can just really make you feel like you're a part of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 100% agree. And also yoga can just be kind of it is intimidating to a lot of people in general. So the more personable you can be, the better. And you don't have to go over the top to where it's out of your character. But I mean, they showed up for your class, you know, that's a big deal. And you probably want them to come back. So yeah, make them feel included. And it's thankful that they came to your class that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And so what is the next tip?
Yeah. So I've just got a couple more. So my next one is bring in things that you're interested in. So this could be mudras, mantras, visualizations, just whatever you like to kind of, you know, set your class apart. That's the one. And then my last one is to plan your classes. So to come up with a theme and a sequence and then let intuition guide you. So there's kind of a discussion about, well, should you do let your intuition guide you or should you, you know, actually plan at your class and things like that. And I think that for me, teaching is, you know, about 15, 16 years now, it really, I like to have a combination of both. So I really think it's important to put the time in and develop your class, your theme, your sequence and everything like that, and then bring it to class. So many teachers are like, oh my gosh, I don't want to have my sequence up there. Like, I feel like I'm not good enough if I have my sequence. It's like, no, that shows your students that you actually cared and you sat down and you planned out a class. And then if you have that, then you can let intuition come through and inspiration. And yes, some things might change. Some things might go out the window, you know, but I really do think it's important to have that available to you. And because a lot of times the classes, they can get kind of stagnant and they can get kind of stale. And even if you use the same sequence over and over, honestly, if you changed out the theme and everything like that, it would seem like an entirely different class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like sometimes, and I've definitely been here too, like there's this sort of, I guess, like fear of just repeating things over and over. And I remember I had Jason Crandall on the podcast a couple of years ago, and he's like, I teach like the exact same sequence for a whole month. He's like, that way students can actually kind of learn the poses, because so often we're just hitting on things so quickly. But what we don't realize is that a lot of our students actually want opportunities to learn these things and go deeper with them and actually have time to feel and explore them in their bodies. And I was like, why are we not talking about this more, you know?
Yes. And that's what I teach. You know, if you're teaching like three classes a week, that's what I say, teach the same sequence. So all you have to do is sit down and plan one sequence per week, and you can change that for the different levels that you're teaching. And even if you're teaching a restorative class and then a vinyasa, you know, they still can have at least the same theme, if not the same sequence. And then that's what I say, you know, if they're like, well, won't students get bored? I'm like, well, turn it around so it's in their favor. Like, hey, I'm giving you the opportunity to really let this pose sink in and really learn what we're talking about this week. And as a teacher, you're going to say things in different ways each time that might really make it land in a much deeper or different way for your students every time you do it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there's so many like schools of yoga that actually practice in this way. I mean, Bikram is one, Ashtanga is another, with like primary and secondary series, like where if you go to a Bikram class, you're doing the same, you know, 30 some odd poses in the room every time you go. And with Ashtanga, you know, you're practicing like primary series. It's going to be relatively similar depending on how long the class is. And part of that is so that you can see that progress in your body and in your mind and in your breath, which I definitely like understand that. I think that it is cool too. I practice both of them like on and off over the years of my yoga practice. And it is cool to be able to see like the different ways in which you're changing with the practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree. I mean, I don't personally practice those kinds of things, like where you do the same sequence over and over, but I definitely see the benefit in it. And I think it just really depends also on your personality and what you need at that time in your life.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's cool that there's lots of different options for different people. I think something else too with this is like, you know, often you have to think about yourself as the practitioner. Like, I'm often not thinking about the yoga teacher sequence and like, did we do this on Monday? Or like, when's the last time I did this pose, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I'm just having the experience of breathing and feeling into my body. So I know this is so hard as a yoga teacher because you're so conscious of every little thing that you say and do, but like people aren't paying attention at like 100% capacity, right? Like they're not 100% alert because they're having this experience for themselves. And I think that that's a really relieving thing to me as a yoga teacher. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I can just be silent and hold space for people. Like I don't have to be talking constantly or, oh, I like messed up saying something like everyone's not like staring at me, you know, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And that brings up another point. I mean, let go of perfection, and because there's no such thing as perfect, and laugh at yourself. You know, if it's obvious that like you didn't do something on one side, it's like, oh my God, like we totally didn't do that. Let's get into that now and do that on the other side. Like just, it doesn't matter. Like, and the more you can just be real, then you're going to give your students the opportunity to be that way too. Like, listen, we're not about perfection. Like it's totally, you know, okay. And then I think that that just helps your students to see the like human side of you, because I think a lot of times students kind of put yoga teachers up on pedestals and they just kind of glide into the room and they are, you know, this perfect being who has everything figured out. And it's just like, you know, that's not how, you know, how it has to be. We're real people too. And I think it like, oh, it kind of makes your students just kind of have like, oh, like have a sigh of relief whenever they see that you're a little bit human too, you know? Well, yeah, you're just as human as they are.
Yeah. I think it can be really dangerous to get into like putting people that we study from or learn from on pedestals. And I know it can be hard when you like deeply respect somebody in the work that they do. You kind of think of them a certain way. And if you learn about like another side of their personality, it can be like a little bit alarming. But I think part of this is like our responsibility as yoga teachers to not create any facades or create any like false impressions that we are somebody that we aren't. I remember this was ages ago, but with like Rachel Braithen, Yoga Girl, who is like, you know, the biggest Instagram account of probably any yoga teacher out there. Remember she was talking about when she first started, she got really popular and she was posting, you know, all these like beautiful beach handstand photos from Aruba. And then she posted like a cup of wine one night on like a Friday night, like, and she lost all these followers and got all this hate. And people were like, I thought you were like a vegan yogi. And like, now I find out you drink alcohol. Like you're not who I thought you were at all. And she was like, what? Like I've been drinking wine this whole time.
Wow. Yeah. That's just crazy. I mean, because that's just people's perception of you, you know, she didn't even, yeah, I totally get that. And everybody who follows me, they know pretty quickly, you know, that I was an alcoholic. And, you know, I told a story a while ago about how I loved smoking cigarettes, and I'll be the first person to admit it. I just loved it. And so I smoked for a long time while I taught, and then I'm Febrezing myself. I'm changing my clothes before class, you know, and some people might be like, oh, well, I would never want to study with that kind of person. Well, that's fine. Like then you don't have to study with me. Luckily there's a whole bunch of other yoga teachers out there, but you know, the people that are like, oh, wow. I mean, the people that message me, like in regards to things like that are like, thank you so much for saying that. Like now I know that I can be a yoga teacher because I'm not perfect. It might not be the same exact thing. They might not smoke, but they might have some other thing that they thought would keep them from ever being a yoga teacher, you know, and it's just not true. We make up all sorts of stuff in our mind that's not true.
Yeah. I mean, there's a million addictions out there, right? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. Shopping can be an addiction. Food can be an addiction. There's so many of them that are not just like substances. And,
well, and any emotions, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think a lot of us kind of think like, oh, I've got this and it's something that I should be ashamed of. And because I have this, I'm not good enough to be something like a yoga teacher, or there's probably right. A bunch of other careers, you know, coaches, that type of thing, because I don't have mm-hmm. everything figured out. And I think that that's just one thing we really need to like break down, like get rid of this kind of stigma in our yoga world, because I think that whatever we've experienced in our life really adds to the potency of what we can share with our students, because they're just regular people like us going through life, right? Like they have mm-hmm. their own addictions, their own struggles, their own troubles with their parents or their spouse, et cetera, et cetera. Like the list goes on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And to not get caught up in whatever image we think, you know, yoga teachers should have.
Yeah, 100%. That kind of comes back to, I know you said earlier, like creating spaces where yoga is for everyone and everybody and that type of thing. And I think we're making some good progress in the yoga world mm-hmm. with this. We just see, you know, more, I guess, people shown in advertisements and more Instagram accounts being featured and just more yoga teachers coming from all walks of life. which is pretty cool. But, you know, there's still like so much work to be done with that. And I think part of it is like people feeling like they are worthy of signing up for a yoga teacher training, like they're good enough for that.
Well, and here's the thing. Yeah, you can look, you know, because people compare themselves to all these social media accounts, and just like Rachel Braithen, she wasn't trying to be perfect or anything. She didn't even really, you know, understand, but people were putting her on that pedestal. And then she kind of just, you know, they saw her kind of fall from grace, but that wasn't her fault. It's what they did. And the thing about social media is that, anything can look perfect, you know, but somebody, and I say this quote all the time, like people can be great at gymnastics and be a crappy person. I won't cuss again, but they can be a crappy person. It doesn't mean that they're a great yogi. It doesn't mean that they're doing the work. I mean, to me, being a great yogi is in every moment, as many moments as I possibly can throughout my day, be aware of like how I'm reacting to things and just what weird stuff my mind is doing, like how it's filtering things and just being like, well, is that real or is that imagined? You know, just kind of living my life, trying to be as aware as I possibly can. And that's really kind of the next frontier with me, is not just doing yoga in the moment or in my meditation. Yes, I want to live as a good person. And I've been doing that for a long time, but just trying to be aware as much as possible throughout my day. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm a great yogi either, but I am trying. I'm trying to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's like just doing the work every day is like the important part of that, right? Like not expecting it to just happen immediately or overnight or strive for perfectionism, but just taking the steps to, you know, become the person you want to be each and every day.
Yeah, exactly. You said it much more eloquently than me. Thank you.
I don't know about that, but I've actually wanted to ask you, because I feel like you do such a great job at just being yourself, you know, in your Facebook group with your students, on your social media, and people really love that. Like I've been in your Facebook group for so many years now, and people are really responsive to just being able to know who you are. If somebody's struggling with that, do you have any tips for them as to how they can kind of, you know, start stepping into sharing authentically who they are?
Good question. Well, I mean, the reason why I started doing it is because I knew that I needed to heal. This was, you know, maybe around 2016. I started live streaming a lot, and I was really struggling at that time with overcoming guilt for things that I had done in my addiction or just being an addict in the past. It wasn't just alcohol. You know, before that, it was harder drugs in my early 20s and things like that. And I just had so much guilt and shame around that. And I'm like, you know, there's just some voice inside of me that was like, the way that you are going to heal is to say these things out loud. And so that was really my mission. And the more I did that, you know, I think people think, oh, I'm going to get all this hate, like all these people messaging me and things like that. But I did get people messaging me, but it was like, oh my gosh, if you've been there, then I know that I can be here too. You know, that I can get there. I've had students that have gone through my training that I've heard like years later, you know, say, you know, I was trying to be like somebody else this whole time, or trying to kind of be like this other coach or this teacher or whatever. And then I just said, you know, screw it. That's too hard. I'm going to start being myself. And it's like, let's just cut out all that time where, you know, in between there, where you are trying to be somebody else and just try to be like you. And I think that the struggle is, who am I? You know, because I took some acting classes, and that's the same thing in acting. You're not trying to act like anybody else. You're just being yourself in that moment. And it seems like that would be easy, but it's actually quite hard. So I guess that my biggest suggestion would just to be to start live streaming. And the reason why is because it really was the best way for me to learn and grow. And it scared the crap out of me, but I did it. And it just made me up leveled to this completely different place that I never thought I'd get to.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a cool tip. I like that. And I think there's something kind of, it can be kind of, I guess, maybe scary is not the right word, but it's like people are like watching you, right? And you are just talking. And I think that at some point we can plan out what we want to say, and then our brains just kind of kick off, and it's like we just start saying things that are on our mind. And I think that that can be, like you said, a really great way to heal.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, it wasn't an overnight process. And the more you uncover about yourself, the more authentic I think you could be. That word kind of gets, I don't know, I don't like to use it all the time because it does get used, I think, too much. But I think it just comes with time. The more kind of layers you strip off of yourself, the more you can show up authentically as a teacher, because it's not just showing up authentically as a teacher. It's also in your life, right? So do that work in your life. Cause I know a lot of people are gonna be like, forget that. I'm not live streaming. She's nuts. So the more layers you could strip off in your everyday life, the more layers you'll be able to do that same thing in your teaching. So show up more authentically in your life and you'll be able to do the same thing in your teaching.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I feel like if live streaming seems totally terrifying, I mean, maybe get a journal and start there, you know?
Yeah.
Write to yourself, talk to yourself if that feels a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. I love all of these tips we talked about and whatnot. Crystal, if people want to learn more about you, your programs, all that good stuff, where can they go to find that?
Yeah, they can go to my website. It's Crystal Gray, CRYSTAL, like crystals, and GRAY.me, crystalgray.me, or they can go to my Facebook group. That's the super awesome place to be. It's a really great group with really great vibe. And that was really one of the reasons why I created that group too, is so that everybody feels comfortable. You can come, you can ask questions. Nobody's going to make you feel stupid for asking whatever, you know, any questions that you want, and you're going to get the support you need. And that's called the Yoga Goddess Collective.
Amazing. Thank you so much for all of this. This has been really great.
Thank you, Amanda. It was super fun. We'll have to do it in another 3 years, if not before.
Yeah, exactly. All right, friends, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Crystal Gray. Make sure you go check out everything she's up to. I really, truly love her Facebook group. So that's a really great place to start. And of course, it's free to join. So head on over there and I'll see you inside. If you would like to continue this conversation with Crystal and I, we had a fabulous conversation on MBM Behind the Scenes all about the process of finding her niche. So finding our niche can be something that maybe happens quite easily or maybe is quite challenging for us. Everyone's a little bit different. And Crystal really walks listeners through how she went about this, what her process was like, what she learned from it, and so much more. So if you want to get access to that, it's at patreon.com/MBOMyoga. I'd love to see you behind the scenes. And then, of course, a huge thank you and shout out to our sponsor, Offering Tree. To start spending more time with students and less time with software, head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM to get your exclusive discounts. And of course, thank you to you, the listener of the show. I'm so appreciative that you've made it to the end of this episode. Thanks for being here, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.